From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, those open lines, and of course, your most frightening moment hotline. Well, before I get into some of the news of the day, I wanted to pass my condolences on to a friend, also a very sad story. Years ago in St. Louis, I had the opportunity to work with a young woman by the name of Francine Cuccinello. She was one of our talk show hosts there. Later on, she moved on to Louisville and happened to end up on my affiliate, WHAS, the giant AM station in Louisville, where she had her own morning talk show. Sadly, I just found out today that Francine has passed away. Sometime on the Monday of January 11th, at 43 years old, she suffered a heart attack, followed then a few days later with a brain aneurysm. Francine passed away today at a hospital in Louisville. She was an organ donor, and we all hope through her unexpected death that she can continue to bring life to others. We've lost a great talk show host. Johnson & Johnson said it is expanding its recall of its pain reliever Tylenol to include such other popular over-the-counter brands such as Benadryl, Motrin, and Rolaids. Johnson & Johnson said it was also recalling specific lots of the products because of the reports that they smell musty. Now, some of the users of these products have reported developing nausea, they're vomiting. No serious medical reactions have been reported. The products are marketed by Johnson & Johnson's McNeil Consumer Healthcare Division. Many of the recalled lots were manufactured at a plant in Puerto Rico. The FDA official said that although Johnson & Johnson was aware of consumer complaints as early as September of 2008, it did not properly investigate the problem nor report it to the agency until 2009. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny is the founder of an integrative medicine clinic called Osteomed 2. Sherry, this situation and the fact that they did not properly investigate the problem or report it to the agency is appalling to me.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting that it's a combination of a fungus and a fungicide that they packaged the wood containers with that carted and transported the Tylenol bottles that seems to be the problem in creating a chemical reaction. And it's really amazing that this went on for as long as it did without detection and without the FDA doing this recall.
You might recall back in 1982 in Chicago, seven people died. They were poisoned when some sicko poisoned Tylenol. That case is still under investigation, though they think they may be getting closer to someone who may have been involved with that. Sherry, in this particular case, what does this do marketing-wise to a company? I mean, everybody's going to hear the word Tylenol or Motrin or all these other ingredients that we've been talking about. What happens to them?
Well, I think that this is another one of the wake-up calls, George, to the American consumer population of not only over-the-counter drugs, but at pharmaceutical drugs, that they need to find a better way to stay healthy and not for every little sniffle and every little ache and pain run off to the drugstore and to be able to pull a product off of the shelf. I think it's going to be very damaging for the pharmaceutical industry as a whole.
All right. Thank you, Sherry. And Sherry's information, her website, you'll find it on our Twitter link at coasttocoastam.com. If it wasn't enough, federal prosecutors are saying that the healthcare giant Johnson & Johnson paid tens of millions of dollars in kickbacks so nursing homes would have more patients put on their schizophrenia medicine and other drugs. In a complaint filed Friday, the prosecutor said that J&J paid rebates and other forms of kickbacks to Omnicare. Now, that's the country's biggest dispenser of prescription drugs in nursing homes. The prosecutors allege that Omnicare pharmacists then recommended that nursing home patients with signs of Alzheimer's disease be put on a very powerful schizophrenia drug, Risperdal, which was later found to increase risk of death in the elderly. What's going on over there? NASA is trying to sniff out which employee brought a bag of cocaine into the hangar that houses the Space Shuttle Discovery at Kennedy Space Center in Florida this week. The space agency is preparing the shuttle for a launch to the International Space Station in March. Spaceport officials said an employee found the bag outside a bathroom in the restricted shuttle hangar area. The employee notified security, which then conducted tests confirming that a small amount of cocaine remained in the bag. A human body is washed ashore on New York's tiny Plum Island, where a U.S. government lab studies dangerous animal diseases. Police say a security guard discovered the clothed body on the island's southwest beach area, where access is restricted. The U.N. has launched an appeal for $562 million to help victims of Tuesday's devastating earthquake in Haiti. The U.N. humanitarian chief says the funds were intended to help 3 million people for 6 months. The earthquake has left tens of thousands of people dead, and rescuers are continuing to look for survivors. And when Haiti's economy and political system imploded in 1992, thousands of Haitians decided their country was no longer habitable for them, and they boarded small boats for the journey to the United States, often to Florida. The situation in Haiti is far worse now, and so now they're beginning to think, will this happen again? In the meantime, the Department of Homeland Security has announced it is suspending deportations of illegal immigrants from Haiti, changing them to temporary protected status. An earthquake with a preliminary magnitude of 5.6 struck eastern Venezuela on Friday. No reports of injuries or serious damage there. Wall Street bank J.P. Morgan has reported profits of $3.3 billion for the last 3 months of 2009. That compares with profits of $702 million reported at the end of 2008, at the height of the financial mess. Total profits for the year, nearly $12 billion, with investment banking providing the bulk of the earnings. Our registered investment advisor, Mish Shedlock, with us. That's a lot of money, Mish.
It sure seems like a lot of money, George, but CEO Jamie Dimon came out today and called the performance a little disappointing. Quote, that's what he said about it. Certainly that was the reaction on Wall Street, and a lot of times it's not the news that matters, but the reaction to it. Yesterday we saw Intel come out, beat the street by 7 cents, and today it was down. J.P. Morgan makes $3 billion. It fell today. The stock market fell today. Was this just a little blip here, or is it start of the correction that I've been long expecting? And I certainly have to say, George, my tone has not changed, and it's probably not going to. I was saying the same things in 2007, and I kept saying, my God, how does this market keep going up, keep going up, keep going up? We'll see. I don't know. But in the meantime, in spite of these so-called good earnings, we have to remember that the U.S. government's still guaranteeing $300 billion worth of Citigroup debt and $30 billion worth of this, J.P. Morgan Bank of America merger, or excuse me, J.P. Morgan Countrywide Financial merger takeover. Mm-hmm. So, beneath the scenes, it's small businesses, and I'm reading a small business report, and their profits are down, they're not hiring, they're scared to death over health care, they're scared to death over cap and trade. I think, George, we ought to get together and do a nice segment, if you got some time one night, and talk about what's affecting small businesses, because we're not going to have a recovery in the United States unless small businesses participate, not just these big banking giants.
Okay, very good. Thanks, Mish. And by the way, Countrywide merged with Bank America. The first rocky planet confirmed to be orbiting another star is truly one strange world, with rock rains, potentially raging volcanoes, and huge temperature differences between its night and day sides. This rock might also be the remnant core of a former gas giant whose atmosphere long ago evaporated away. Carat 7b, named after the French telescope that found it, is the so-called super Earth orbiting a star about 480 light years away from Earth. It weighs in at just 5 times the mass of Earth and not quite 2 times the Earth's radius. It's an extrasolar planet, the first of more than 400 that have been found to date that was confirmed to be a rocky world instead of a gas giant. Temperature on this planet, 4,000 degrees Fahrenheit, the side that faces its sun. Now, here's an incredible story. 13-year-old boy in the Texas area named Gentil Abdullah has what he says is a plan for a time machine. Now, we're keeping him up for a little bit. Hello there, Gentile. How are you?
I'm great, George.
Good. Good to have you awake here for us. I don't want to keep you up too late. It's a Friday night. But tell me a little bit about this. You have a plan to build a time machine?
Yes, I do.
How did you get it?
Well, I've been studying about it for, like, a long time. I was basically doing it all summer. It took me a few months, but I think I really got it right this time.
All right. Now, what are the ingredients, Gentile, in this time machine?
Well, now I need a rail gun, a few magnets, about four lasers, and, well, not just four lasers on each rail of the rail gun. For every two rails, there will be one rail with lasers on it.
Now, how big are these magnets that you need?
Well, I need one that's a really dark magnet, a black body. A black body. I'm assuming you know what that is.
Yeah.
And a hydrogen layer, because this circular object, will be in three layers.
So this is pretty big, and I understand that the design of this time machine, through the use of these magnets, will create black holes. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And through this black hole, do you think you'll be traveling?
No, I'm actually traveling through the singularity.
You're going to go through the singularity now. But are you the one that's going to take this actual trip when it's time?
Yes, I'll be the one to take it.
You're not scared?
No, I'm not.
All right, where are you going to go? In the future, or are you going to go back in the past?
Well, I haven't decided that part yet.
Well, what do your parents say about this?
Well, my parents... I'll let you talk to my dad if you want.
Okay. We'll talk to... What's his name, by the way?
His name's Darwood.
Darwood. Okay, yeah. We'll talk to him in a second. So, what kind of grades do you get in school?
Well, I get pretty good grades.
Just pretty good?
Yeah.
I bet you're acing everything, aren't you?
Yeah.
All right. Well, so, you're building this time machine. You came up with this plan all by yourself, right? Just by studying and reading?
Yes.
This is truly amazing. Okay, how close is your dad? Is he close by?
Yeah, but he's kind of sick right now.
Oh, all right. Well, we don't want to talk to him. So when do you think you're going to get all these parts and try this out?
Well, if I get the money and the funding, then I'd probably be able to do it in about 2 months.
2 months? All right. We're going to have to check in with you just to see where you're going. If by that time, you should decide if you're going to go into the future or back in the past. But, I mean, do you have any hint at all what direction you want to go?
Probably want to go into the future.
How far out? What do you think?
Maybe about a year or...
Just a year?
Maybe about a year or a few months.
Go 500 years out. You going to be able to control that?
Yeah, I could be able to control up to millions of years.
Really?
Yes.
All right. Well, we're going to look forward to this. Good luck on your building.
Thanks.
All right. That's little Gentile Abdullah of Texas. 13-year-old boy came up with a plan. It is so lengthy, I can't go through the whole thing with you. But as he said, it has to do with magnets, and ray gun, and all these other things that he's going to put together and create a black hole. And then off he goes. Well, when we come back, Annie Wilder joins us. House of Spirits and Whispers. We're going to talk about a true story of a haunted house. Get ready for that on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Raised with strong intuitive abilities, author Annie Wilde's everyday life has always included the unseen world of spirits, lost souls, angels. Annie's very much in tune with spirit world, hosts haunted tea parties at her spirit-filled Victorian home in Minnesota. Her house has been featured in several television and print news stories as well, investigated by teams of ghost hunters and visited by a number of prominent psychics. Here's Annie Wilder on Coast to Coast. Annie, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you for having me on your show, George. I'm so thrilled to be here.
Old Victorian homes.
It is.
Ooh.
It's a wonderful house. It looked haunted when we bought it. It looked very run down and sort of deserted. even though it had been lived in until 6 months before my realtor and I stopped by. But yes, it had the look of a house that...
the haunted look.
Yeah, sort of spooky and old.
It doesn't look like the Addams Family house, does it?
No, but it does have three stories and a sort of funky window in the attic and old porches all the way around. And the yard was very, there were only three trees and there were boulevard trees. The rest of the yard was bare and it just looked sort of unloved.
When did you realize there's something strange about this house?
As soon as we walked in the back door. The realtor and I had been told to enter the house through the back door, which was sort of crazy because when you are, showing a house for sale, you want to have curb appeal. You want people to, come to the front door. And this house had been a very grand house at one time. But we came in the back door, and the house, which had been built as a single-family home in the 1860s or 1870s, had been converted into a duplex in the 1930s and then converted into a triplex in the 1960s. And over the years, the house had gotten quieter and more run down. And when we looked at it in 1994, there had been an old man living here alone. And he had lived in the back apartment. And as soon as we stepped into the house, into that back apartment, my realtor and I looked at each other and I said, "Do you know if the old man died in the house?" And he said, "I'll find out." Because we both felt that it was just a very heavy feeling. You felt like someone was watching you. And the other thing that was weird is this house had not been updated. I mean, it had antique stoves and the original windows and the old hardwood floors and the kind of sinks where you have a hot faucet on one side and cold on the other.
Did it have that old wallpaper look to it and all that too? Yeah.
Yeah. I've seen that. It was very, I actually love that because I love historic buildings and historic things and antiques.
Well, they don't build those houses that way anymore. You know, these things are solid houses, aren't they?
Yes. This house, structurally, it was really sound. And it's got, gorgeous woodwork and stuff like that. But the house had been on the market for 6 months at a really low price, and no one had made any offers.
Ooh, that should have told you something, Annie. Bingo.
Exactly. Well, I had 3 months, three weeks until the move-out date for my house because I had had offers on three different houses over the course of a year, and they fell through. And the last one was sort of weird because I had offered them what they were asking, and they had only had their house on the market for a few days, and then they gave my offer back. And there I was, and my realtor called me. He's like, "This house just popped up." He said, "It sounds too good to be true." He said it.
And that's another warning.
Exactly.
When it sounds too good to be true.
Exactly. But it didn't feel evil or demon clown type ghost. It just felt like very heavy, gloomy energy. And I feel pretty confident in my ability to bring a lot of positive energy to a situation or place. And I thought, all right, if I still feel this way after walking through the house and giving it a day or two to think about it, I want to buy this house because it's so cool,
So you did. You bought it and in you go, right?
Right, with my kids who were teenagers.
How many?
Two.
Okay. Any pets on your end?
Yeah, two cats.
Did they seem sensitive when they went into the house?
Yes. Actually, we had one cat. That was sort of a movie star cat. You know, he thought he was human and stuff like that. And the other cat was really timid and gentle.
Yeah.
And both of them were terrified for the first week. That in itself might not be so unusual to move into a new place, but our timid cat, whose name was Theo, started behaving really oddly. And the weirdest thing that he did was, and he was 6 years old, when we moved here. So by that time, you pretty much know your cat's personality and nature.
Well, you stay with us, Annie, because we're going to come right back and find out exactly what happened with the cat and what happened in the house. Annie Wilder's newest work, Spirits Out of Time, as we talk about her family loom of ghost stories. They're everywhere. And, of course, she's in Hastings, Minnesota. It's about 45 miles or so from Ian Punnett. Hey, Ian, how are you?
Good. It's actually, more like 45 minutes, not too far. I was just down there the other day, actually. I was visiting Hastings or something, and I went down, turned around, came right back for a swim meet down in Hastings.
How cold has Minnesota been this year?
Very cold up until this week. Pretty much 21 degrees below average on most days.
Jeez.
And then suddenly in the last couple of days it's warmed up. So we'll take any little bit we get. When we poke above freezing, it's a cause for celebration.
Yeah, you know, I lived there in 78, and it was cold then. Then it started warming up a little bit, but I think it's going right back again.
You know, George, I'm going to tell you this, and this is a little private moment, so everybody else, pardon me, but I just want you to know this. If you remember working in the building of 5 Eyewitness News,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
You were kind of a muckety-muck and everything there, right?
I was down there. That's right.
We just changed the wallpaper in the cafeteria. Literally, since the history of the building, it just got changed about a year ago.
You will find in the corner a little inscription that said, George was here.
That wouldn't surprise me. But that wallpaper was famous, and it just recently, finally, was changed. So coming up tomorrow night, actually, another guy is kind of nice coincidence from Minnesota. He's Joel Barker. He's known as the guy who popularized the term paradigm shift. And futurist, trend watcher. What we did, George, we pulled up a New York Times Magazine piece from the year 2000, which listed all of the things that we were all going to have in our lives by the year 2010.
Aha.
These were their predictions back in 2000. These were gimmies. These were 2-foot putts. These were absolutely going to happen in 10 years. So we've got that coming up tomorrow night. We'll go over the ones that did and didn't happen. And then, as he is inclined to do, as somebody who watches business trends and looks for the future, he's going to tell us what we will have for sure by the year 2020. Assuming, of course, we get past 2012 tomorrow night. And in the first hour, the lawyer who says he was on that flight that the underpants bomber attempted to bring down, who said he saw a man in a sharp-dressed man in a suit get this guy on the plane.
That's what we hear.
Maintains that happened, and he'll talk about the FBI following him and all the things that have happened since then coming up tomorrow night in the first hour.
All right. Thanks, Ian. Ian Punnett on Saturday, George and Appleby on Sunday night here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Annie Wilder, our special guest. Annie, okay, let's pick up the story. One of your cats acting a little weird in the house, huh?
Right. He was doing things that are really unnatural for any cat, but totally out of character for him. And the strangest thing was he started to just stand on his hind legs. And I don't mean in the sort of begging on their haunches way that cats will do if they want a treat of something. I would walk into a room and he would just be standing in the middle of the room. And it was so disturbing because it's just like, it's not cat behavior. It doesn't even seem like something they can do. And I told my kids about it. My kids were teenagers when we moved in, and they already had, you know, felt the ghost stuff here. We thought there was one ghost. We didn't know that the house is sort of like a grand central station for ghosts. I might not have been brave enough to move in if I had realized how weird this house is.
How did you know, though, that there was more than one? How do you make that distinction?
We have seen several different ghosts. And
what era might they look like they were from?
Well, one was the old man who had owned the house before us. And he, when I saw him, and before moving here, I had seen one ghost and possibly two in my life. So I feel that I am intuitive and I'm interested in ghosts and things like that, but I'm not highly psychic. I'm always trying to develop my skills, but this house is just a very, if you believe in ghosts, it's really, really haunted. And if you don't believe in ghosts, it's very energetically weird. The old man who we have, actually now I feel that he is an ally and sort of like a protective spirit for this house.
Hmm.
But he was an old German guy.
So you're not chasing him away?
No. I have sort of the philosophy that spirits that are friendly and respectful are welcome here.
Are you having any bad entities there at all?
Yes.
Oh, you are.
Actually, I was thinking about the interview today and just thinking, like, what was the last spirit that I actually saw in the house? And it was last summer, 2008, and it was one of the bad experiences. I haven't had too many here.
What happened?
I woke up, and in the bedroom that I'm in now, it's the least haunted room of the house. It usually feels really safe. But I woke up and I was all curled up, like curled up in a protective way.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that there was a small hooded being. And most of the spirits we've seen here, we have been able to identify as someone who lived in the house or recognize them as a family member or someone that we knew. These didn't even look human because they were too small. They were like, I don't know, 4.5 feet tall or 4 feet tall. And I just saw one at first. And this is going to sound really weird. You don't know me, but I am a person who has a job, raised kids, pays taxes, all the normal stuff. But this little being, it seemed to me like it was trying to pull my spirit out of my body.
So you felt some evil here?
Yes, I felt a threat. And I started to pray and ask for help. This is where having a working relationship is sort of a weird term, but I do feel that Leon, the old man who lived here before us, is a protective force for this house. And I call on his help when I need help with ghost stuff. And I ask for his help, and I ask for my family spirits to help me. And I saw this little being. The best way to describe it is like something removed it from the room, because all of a sudden it was pulled like backwards and up, like it was being sucked out of the house or something.
Right.
And that's when I realized there were three more little hooded beings behind it.
Remember the movie Ghost with Patrick Swayze
and
Demi Moore?
Right.
Those little creatures that would come and take people when they passed on. Small and hooded, almost the same thing.
Were they hooded? I don't have a clear memory, but I thought they were more like shadowy sort of
I don't know, but it looked like shadowy hooded-looking creatures.
Well, I think anything hooded to me seems at least vaguely threatening, because you can't see who they are. You know, they're hiding their identity.
It's funny how some of these gang kids now wear these hooded outfits. You know, that's funny that you would say that. Tell me a little bit about the ghost hunters that have been to the house trying to investigate. I mean, what have they come up with?
I have had one team come through my house twice, and I really like these guys. They are from northern Minnesota, up on the Iron Range. And if you lived in Minnesota, you might be familiar with the Iron Range and sort of a very hardworking, down-to-earth vibe.
Absolutely, yeah.
And by the way, if Ian ever wants to come by, if he lives around here, and have tea.
He's 45 minutes away. So,
all right, Ian, you're totally welcome. Come and
of course,
see
the way me. The way Ian drives.
Might be 35 minutes.
Yeah, or 10.
Well, anyway, the the paranormal guys from, it's actually Haunting Research, if you want to look on their website.
Do they come with equipment and everything
else
like that?
Yeah, and that's what I wanted because I'm technologically, terrible. I'm no good at any of that stuff. And
well, so you wouldn't call yourself a ghost hunter.
Mm-mm.
You're the owner of a haunted house.
Right.
Okay.
And I'm interested in ghosts, but like if I see ghosts or hear things, that to me is a ghost experience. But these guys brought cameras and...
They spend the night or just come in for a little bit?
They were here till probably 1 or 2 in the morning.
All right.
And they got here like 5 or 6. So they spent quite a bit of time. And they came twice because they said that they recorded more EVPs in my house than they had ever gotten in any private residence that they had investigated. And we sent some EVPs to you. I don't know if you'll have a chance to play them tonight.
I listened to them, but, from disc like that to radio, you're just not going to hear them.
Okay.
So we're not gonna have them.
People can check them out on my website.
Good.
And the very first voice, they said that before they even started asking questions, you know, because usually the investigators will walk through a house and ask questions. But before they had even asked questions, the voices started talking, like as they had their equipment turned on. And they didn't realize this, of course, until they got back and played the EVPs. But the first voice that they got was a woman's voice saying, "See my home." And I love that because it's friendly and it's not... something, you know.
Right, and it's not like, get out of my home.
Exactly. And I have heard, I've had many psychics come through my house also, you know, independent of each other.
And you're not a psychic either, right?
I wish I were.
Okay.
I'm working on developing.
Well, you can. You can develop that. There's no doubt about
it. But I'm not a natural, like people who can just come in and tune in. I would say that I am, I'm pretty good at picking up energy and sensing energy, and I have seen things here because the house is so amplified that even people who don't believe in ghosts are seeing things here and having experiences. But I have been told by psychics that the spirits, there are a lot of spirits that are associated with the house that we have seen and been able to identify from photographs and things like that. And I've been told that this house, people fall in love with this house. And they want to come back. They're coming back to visit, and they're coming back to just because they like the house. And
have your children been scared?
Yes. Actually, my daughter, when she was 16, and I called her the warrior princess because she was unafraid of anything.
Yeah. Until then.
Exactly. She had a dream, and that is another thing that's weird about this house. When people spend the night, and everybody wants to spend the night in a haunted house.
Now, this is not a bed and breakfast place, is it?
It's not. Tea parties is as far as I've gone.
All right, so you're not letting the whole community come
and
sleep.
No, these are friends and friends of friends.
Okay.
But the most common experience that people have when they spend the night, whether they believe in ghosts or not, is that they wake up and they can't tell if they're awake or asleep. They think they're awake, but they see someone standing beside their bed, or
ooh,
they see someone out in the hallway.
See, that's
beckoning.
Freaky. That's freaky.
Right, and that's part of what this whole energetically unusual description sort of covers. But the other thing that's happening is that even in dreams, we're finding weird correlations to things that can be verified later on. And Molly's dream was that there was an evil spirit in the house, and she knew that, and she was trying to wake the rest of us up, and we wouldn't wake up. It was like we were under a spell. And so she went to dial the phone to call 911, and the phone didn't work. Now, this is her dream.
Jeez.
She was going to run down the stairs and try to get help. And as she got to the top of the steps, I have a landing. You go up 2 steps, there's a landing. You go up a flight of steps, there's another landing. There was a ghost. This evil ghost was at the bottom landing, and it was a young female ghost with a shaved head.
Now, when you say evil, what did it try to hurt her?
Well, she just sensed that it was evil. She had already sensed in her dream that the ghost was in the house and that it was evil.
You can feel that, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. And so when Then Molly decided that she had to run past the ghost and just try to get out, because otherwise we were all doomed. And as she started running down the steps, the ghost in the dream started walking up the steps backwards. That is another characteristic that people are having in dreams here, and I do too, where things are just a little bit off, like somebody will walk backwards or the house will be a mirror image of itself.
So this is continuing to this day.
Yes.
You don't want to exorcise the house. You don't want to get rid of them.
I feel that if there was something lingering in this house that was negative, I would, yes, I would do everything I could to.
Are the evil spirits gone?
I think that my house is energetically conducive to spirits either coming through or just coming into the physical world. And so I think we have spirits coming and going here. And occasionally we have bad experiences, but not very often. And I do a lot to keep the energy of my house positive. I do think that wherever you are, it's a person's responsibility to keep their own energy positive and the energy of their environment. And so I like to think I'm good at that. I like to decorate, and I used to clean houses, and I like to plant. And, you know, so I feel like one of the best defenses against negative energy is a positive, environment.
Sure, much more so. When did you decide to catalog with the story, The House of Spirits? When did that all happen, the book?
Oh, 2005 is when it came out.
And, you know, it's basically a true account of what happened there.
Right.
Not quite the Amityville Horror House.
Right. Well, let me finish quickly, if I may, the story of this ghost coming up the stairs.
All right.
Molly was running down. The ghost was coming up. And as Molly ran past it, the ghost lifted up Molly's hair. She has long hair, and blew icy breath into the back of her neck. And that's when Molly woke up and was so scared that she came and slept with me. And years later, I mean, we thought it was a really scary dream and disturbing. And I asked Molly if she felt safe in the house, and she said she did. It was just a bad dream. But years later, I found out that I read a book by Cindy Dale, and she is an energy health expert on auras and chakras. Mm-hmm. And she said that if spirits want to move into your energy field or you know, get into your physical body,
possess
they enter, yeah, they enter through the back of the throat chakra, and that is at the back of the neck.
That's interesting. Almost got your daughter.
Yeah.
Almost. So tell me about these tea parties. What do you do there?
I've set up the tea parties because I had so many people who wanted to come and see my house that after telling about 20 or 30 people, yeah, if I'm out in the yard or on the porch, just stop by, I realized I was going to have to set up something more organized and systematic. And so the tea parties are usually people who have read my book or heard me speak.
Are they there to see the ghosts?
Mm-hmm. To see the house and hear the stories, and I have a bunch of photographs and I don't make any guarantees. I always invite the spirits to participate, but I'm not in charge of spirits. They have free will. And so I would say about half the time something weird will happen, like lights will go off and on or the smoke.
Yeah, we got to get Ian over there so he can make a full report for me.
That would be great.
We're going to take some phone calls next, Danny, and also stories, your stories on Coast to Coast AM.